name is?
My name is Don, D-O-N, last name Knox, K-N-O-X.
You live in Highline Community?
Highline
Community.
Highline Crossing.
Highline Crossing, that's yeah. Right. I don't even know where I'm at. Why was it named what it was?
Highline Crossing? It's right next to a canal. There's a canal that goes all the way through the city of Denver. And it goes from way southwest all the way to the north part of the city to the what's called the Rocky Mountain Arsenal. And the canal was built in the 1800s. And we are right next to the canal. And there's a bridge that was built, a pedestrian bridge, that is built right where our community is. So that the crossing over the Highline is what it's called.
Did you have some predisposition to community? Did your parents, for example, have communal or cooperative interests?
No. I grew up in the suburbs of Denver, an area called Lakewood, and it's all single-family tract home kind of
suburbs.
Stuff.
Yeah. Out in the suburbs.
Yeah.
What kinds of books or other literature did you read that influenced you as you began or continued to live in the community? I mean, if any.
In this community? You know, I didn't read any, as I kind of said during today's presentation, I kind of married into the community, so I didn't like seek out co-housing or communal living. But when I got here, because of a relationship I was in, and I dated my wife, and then we got married in January of 2002, and so since then, there's a lot of books. We have a library, and there's a lot of books about consensus and communal living, and there's magazines, co-housing magazine that brings up issues. And so I make a lot of reference to those because there's a lot of issues between, even though there's like 7 or 11 co-housing communities in Colorado, and even though they're not very close together necessarily, some of them Boulder, some of Fort Collins, and we're the only one in our entire county. So even though they're not close together, a lot of the issues are the same. So they all tend to have a common house, and they all tend to have issues with like keeping up the common house, or meals, or kids in the common house, which you heard about today, yesterday. And so it's always good to read about what the experiences are of other co-housing communities. Because this, you know, co-housing in America is fairly recent, you know, 1989, which is only 14, 15 years. And so, and there's like 100 communities across the country, and so, you know, you always do try to learn from the experience of other communities, see what's the, you know, in business they would call it best practices. What are the best practices? And so like on the kids in the common house issue, we kind of reviewed a lot of, you know, some communities don't allow kids in the common house ever, and other communities were very liberal and built a teen center and encouraged kids to be in the common house. So kind of consider a wide range of stuff. There's a lot of reading.
I can imagine. I'm probably doing that. Kind of figure it all out.
Yeah.
Did the community, or does the community, have any central religion or ideology? And if so, how is it practiced? Are there any rituals or ceremonies?
Yeah. There's definitely no single religion. It would be, you know, just everybody comes from all sorts of religious backgrounds.
I can tell, though, from that the people I've talked to, people in there, fairly, they seem intellectuals, on the intellectual side.
Yeah. And I would say some people are very spiritual, you know. But there, for example, there's no like organized religious activity in the common house. The activities tend to be more meditative or yoga or some dancing or, you know, some sort of like craft thing. People tend to, as far as religion, I think, you know, definitely people are religious, attend church ceremonies and stuff, but because it wasn't founded on a single religion, it's not, there is no dominant religious theme here. And then, what was your second part of your question?
Yeah, how is it practiced?
Oh, how is it
practiced? Or are there any rituals or ceremonies?
Rituals or ceremonies. There's a lot of, I don't know if they qualify as rituals. There's a lot of, there's ritual, certain meals during the week. So which
repetitive acts?
Repetitive, repetitive things. There's certain community weekend things, cleanup things, maintenance kind of weekends. And then there are certain, holidays are celebrated.
Just more like Judeo-Christian holidays, or are we talking like
there's no
anything straying off the
you know, it's interesting. I don't think there's no Kwanzaa, or there's no, I don't think there's, I don't think there's a Jewish celebration, but maybe there are Jewish people in the community, and I just don't pay attention to it. But they do tend to be more secular in nature. So Halloween or 4th of July, but then around the holidays themselves, they are more Judeo-Christian. There'll be a Christmas gathering, and on Easter there'll be, it won't be a religious ceremony, but people get together.
It's more secular.
Easter eggs and stuff like that, maybe before going to church.
Mm-hmm.
And they may go to church together. There's certainly groups of folks that lead the property of their church together. But there's never been a sort of ritual.
You don't know of like a, in the founding of this, there wasn't like a socialist ideal or?
There was, socialism, I don't think there was a, not political in the word of socialist, but definitely a social idea. So, and speaking of a ritual, when the community started, if you go back and there's some photos in the Common House, and I think they had like a Native American blessing, and there was a ritual of the property when they first, broke ground and stuff like that. Because remember, this was all, this was treeless, kind of prairie. Where we are right now,
mm-hmm.
the canal didn't exist, the reservoir across the way didn't exist, there was no water, these big trees, but these trees have been here for 100 years because the water has been here 100 years now. So this was really Indian country, and so mm-hmm. they did do that. I think you have to talk to some of the founders about what it is that was the ideal. I certainly think cooperative living, working together, community garden, regular meals, it was based on really interacting with your neighbors, not so much, so I say social, not socialist. One of the aspects of the community is that if you notice the design, everybody's kitchen faces the pedway.
Mm-hmm.
There's a feeling that, and there's always windows in front of the houses so that you could walk down the pedway and see people eating or making their meals, and so that was a very intentional thing that the developer did. And that most of the buildings would look facing towards the common house. And the pedway is a central theme, so just, no vehicular traffic. Your kids can play out amongst themselves. You don't have to worry about what kind of trouble they might get into. And everybody can see kind of everything. And that translates into, people can, if you run out, I don't think many people lock their doors here. So mm-hmm. it's a very safe community. And there's almost always someone here 24 hours a day. So if you if Max, we had to leave suddenly and Max is 10 years old, there would always be somebody to watch him during the day,
mm-hmm.
even though we weren't here. But it's a good question for the founders, what they had in mind.
Yeah, because it's not communal, so in the sense that you're not really sharing incomes or kind of like a socialist idea maybe that way.
No. We're sharing more than a typical suburban
right.
neighborhood would share. We have a commercial kitchen. We have certain, there's certain specific rooms in the common house, a library, an exercise room, a family, kind of a family room, a TV room.
Do you?
In a large dining room.
Do you and your family often go over there with other families and spend time together throughout the week, or is it?
It's usually around a certain activity. In fact, you know, one of the things about, there's a good deal of stuff going on in the common house, but then there's also a good deal of stuff going on in the private residences. And so we'll just as often have someone over, or a couple people over for dinner here as attend an event in the common house. So mm-hmm. it's kind of a good way to kind of balance the, you know, the community versus the private home kind of thing. So you can, you know, when you have a big community dinner with 30 or 40 people, you don't necessarily get to interact with people the way you might do if you just had a six-person dinner party. So if there's an event in the common house, you know, we'll try to attend. There's usually something going on in the common house every night, but it's not always a meal. Sometimes it's a committee meeting or a...
So usually there is an event in there every night?
There's usually something, you know, even if it's for an hour.
Is it the same people in there every night, or...?
No, you could walk in two separate nights and it'd be completely different groups of people. There are about, I would say, about 80 people in the community, and probably about 55 or 60 at one point or another cycle through the common house, and maybe 10, 15, 20-ish, you know,
are never involved.
Are not involved. I mean, you'll see them on the pedway on a nice day. They'll be going to work, coming home from work, but they won't be involved in common house activities. Mm-hmm.
How do people relate to each other?
Very good question. The what they said in the meetings this morning was really true. The one of the things about in general, they relate very well. You know, people are understanding. It's like, you know, Anne Frank said, you know, there's really good in all of us. Mm-hmm. And they get along, and there sometimes can be encounters where people have difficult situations, and that kind of colors a relationship. So they're not so much. There are certain, I wouldn't say cliques, but there are certain groups of people who are familiar with each other. There's a lot of overlap. So it's not cliquish in nature, but it's kind of...
It's never been like a team start forming against one another?
No, it's not competitive like that, like Survivor or anything. But one aspect, there is an aspect of like Survivor, and that is that there can be, you know, there are certain people who... might be get along with everybody, mm-hmm. and then there are certain people that are
pretty abrasive.
Disliked by most people, or, you know, abrasive and difficult, and so. But on the whole, you know, everybody gets along. And then the one aspect about difficult situations is that, you know, in a neighborhood, in a suburban tract neighborhood, if you got into a difficult situation with someone, it would you'd be pretty easily able to avoid them. Mm-hmm. And here, it's a little harder to avoid someone, so that at some point, you know, you like to think that people resolve their differences just because they kind of have to, because mm-hmm. you run into them all the time. So.
Do they? Are there feuds that go on for you?
Well, and I brought that up at the meeting. There are feuds. And, you know, one example, I'll give you one that involves me, is that there was this... There is a member of the community who's not active at all, you know, so falling in that mm-hmm. class of 20 people who not long after she moved in, yelled at me, right? Just got, there was, you know, just kind of a minor issue, but we had a difficult start, and we've never really repaired that, and I think that's largely because...
You never see her.
I never see it. Yeah, so because you're not forced to repair it, it doesn't get repaired. So kind of things can fester out there. Things can fester out if you see the person too. You know, some people probably avoid people. I don't tend to avoid many people in the common house. I get along with pretty much everybody. There are people I like better, mm-hmm. you know, than people, and some people I don't socialize with a lot because, you know, I might, you know, one or two people who rub me the wrong way, kind of, and mm-hmm. so you just...
A personality clash.
Yeah, you know, you might have had, I'm a little like everybody, conflict avoidance, and, you know, nobody's looking to get into a battle with somebody, so my best to maybe not sit at their table tonight, that
right.
kind of thing. So.
How are chores and housework handled? I mean, you don't have a common household, but I guess this is what you guys are going to talk about tomorrow.
Well, we do have a lot. Yeah, it's a good question. But how are chores handled? Because there are a lot of maintenance tasks around the community. I'm on the building committee, and I would say there's two main committees for parceling out the tasks, and one is building and one is grounds. That pretty much covers everything. There's also a common house committee. There's a process committee that deals with how things are handled. There's a finance committee that deals with money. There's something called the WINGS team, which is like an intergenerational team that works on young people's issues and older people's issues.
Curious to how it's named WINGS, is that an acronym?
Yeah, it's an acronym for something. Intergenerational, I don't know what the W stands for. I'm not on that team.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that most people in the community would know what WINGS mean, but mm-hmm. but probably everybody on the WINGS team would know.
Yeah.
And then there's building, garden, common house. So anyway, buildings and gardens takes up most of the work, and so there's seven buildings here besides the common house, and each building has a building representative, and I'm the building representative for this building. So if something breaks down in the middle of the night, they're supposed to call me. If they identify some sort of problem, like stucco's collapsing, or my, you know, I have termites, or my plumbing's going. And then there's a committee that meets every month that kind of parcels out tasks. And it doesn't work perfectly, and that's why you see some friction about that meeting stuff, because, you know, because there is a great amount of work that has to be done, it tends to be a few people doing all the work.
Right.
And so the community is struggling how to better parcel that out. And some people are, you know, some people, the contribution people do to the community shouldn't just be physical in nature. I mean, a lot of people do a lot of intellectual. My wife runs the finance committee, and she runs all the bills for the community. She probably does as much work as anyone because she's constantly 4, 6, 8 hours a week working on the community. Well, she does that from our house and people don't see that, whereas other people might be lifting and pulling and
mowing
and it'd be much more visible. So there's like, I think there's some community members think they work harder than other community members, but in fact, everyone works pretty hard.
Except for like the 20 people that aren't involved, or do they?
Except for the 20 people, well, and of those 20 people, you know, some of them rent here. It's an issue Brock got brought up today. They didn't necessarily buy into co-housing. Because this looks like any other apartment complex that you would see in a suburban area, it's not necessarily obvious to you that it's co-housing or that it operates differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really an issue for the sellers of the homes, you know. There's, you know, some sellers stress the co-housing benefits and nature of the community, and other sellers look on it as a bit of a value reducer, that, you know, if they stress co-housing, that they might get a lower price
right.
for their unit. That, you know, it's better to be in the, you know, considered traditional than untraditional. Untraditional might mean a lower property value. So they kind of hang it out there as, that's, you got a great condo along the Highland Canal with a view of the mountains and come by.
Great community. Right.
Yeah, great community, nice central home in the middle, but, right. you know, commercial kitchen, you can use anytime. And they don't really talk about the Danish style co-housing experience because they're worried about property value. Which is a real issue, I would say. I mean, I think...
Is that true, though, if they were to say that, with the property value going down? I mean, I don't know anything about real estate.
I think that, well, I think it might be. I think if you, you know, I think when you say communal, people...
Oh, yeah.
People, if you say communal, people are like, oh, I don't want communal. But this is kind of quasi-communal. And I think that when you say co-housing, you do narrow the market of buyers who buy. So if you say condominium, that narrows the market. If you say co-housing, that narrows the market further. So, although
But in a sense, though, I mean, supply and demand, there are fewer co-housing than there is of, you know, I mean...
Right, but co-housing is still relatively unknown. Yeah. And so...
The demand's not there.
The demand may not be there. And then where we live, particularly Arapahoe County, is an affluent and mostly Republican area, whereas co-housing is thought to be kind of a liberal, educated, socialist kind of thing. And so it might be, you might have that phenomenon up in Boulder and Lafayette and Louisville, where it's a little more liberal. But here, it's probably viewed as a negative. And I think the point is that, you know, I think the homeowners who sell and represent it as a regular community do a disservice. Mm-hmm. And we pay the price for it, because when people come in and they haven't bought into their co-housing theme, then they don't usually contribute, they don't understand. And when they do learn, because they haven't briefed on it, and they haven't bought into it, a lot of times they reject it. And just treat it as a nice condo next to the canal. Mm-hmm.
What are the economic arrangements? Does the community have cottage industries?
Yeah.
What are the source of money? Is money held in common? No,
right. Money's not held in common. The, we pay, you know, we would pay, and this is more a function because we're a small community, because we're only 40 units. You know, when you think about a big complex with 300 units, a traditional apartment complex, you can spread a lot of costs over 300 units. So we tend to pay higher than usual homeowners' fees, because we have fewer units to spread the costs over. So, you know, in a typical apartment complex, you know, if you had to repave the parking lots, it would be one fee. Well, here it would tend to be a little higher,
mm-hmm.
because of fewer units. And then, so in that respect, we do pay more for the privilege of living in co-housing. And, but there's no shared income or anything like that. As far as cottage industry, there are quite a few people that work out of their homes. I mean, it's not, you heard from Martha today, who makes jewelry in her house. Other people have telecommuting jobs. There's a lot of business people who live here. Lyman Coleman ran a religious printing company. Jim Tynan, his family runs Tynan's Volkswagen here in town, Tynan Nissan. My wife and I publish a weekly newspaper for lawyers. So it did tend to attract business people who are self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
But, and in a few instances, other community people have been brought in to assist for those. So, you know, the kids will help me put out a mailer.
Mm-hmm.
for the newspaper, but there's no necessarily ongoing cottage industry or something we're producing, honey or
mm-hmm, right.
some sort of jam or but you do tend to get craftsy people who make things and share.
How are spending decisions made? Or who makes the spending decisions? There's a finance committee.
There's a finance committee, but really the entire committee comes together once a year, beginning in September, to work on the budget. We have a budget of about $88,000 this year. And so about $20,000 of that goes into, so $88,000 divided by 40 units divided by 12, that's about what the homeowner's fee is. So it's somewhere between $150 and $220 a month. And then out of that $80,000, the lion's share of it goes to pay, or the largest share, not the lion's share, goes to pay insurance.
Uh-huh.
So we pay $18,000 a year to insure the buildings. And you may have heard we had a pretty devastating snowstorm last year in the community in March of last year that caused a lot of damage, about $30,000 of damage, which is pretty significant.
Uh-huh.
And then the rest of the money gets parceled out after that. We've had a lot of insurance loss. We've had a lot of plumbing problems, and so money's tight. And then about $20,000 of that $88,000 goes into a long-term reserve. The long-term reserve is up over about, let's say it's about $110,000 now, somewhere in that area, maybe a little more. And that $110,000 really set aside, and we do a long-term reserve analysis to kind of predict when are things going to go break,
mm-hmm.
and when do things need to be replaced, like the concrete on the pedway, when do we have to rip that all up and put in new. And so the reserve study, we actually hire people to kind of anticipate our reserve, do our reserve analysis, and then we adjust that portion of the homeowner's fee every year so that we know that we have enough money to pay for stuff that breaks, or
mm-hmm.
repainting and repaving, light bulbs in the parking lamps and stuff like that. So it's pretty, it's actually fairly well managed. I mean, it's, there's, we seek professional help in running our affairs. It's not entirely just our initiative.
Mm-hmm. Who owns
so
the land?
Guidance. The land is owned by the community.
It's owned by the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the land and the buildings, the outside, the exterior of the buildings are owned by the community. And I don't think there's any, there's no piece of property in here that belongs to any individual homeowner. Some of it's limited use, like the backyards.
Mm-hmm. Does the community have an open door membership, an open door visitor policy?
That's kind of two questions. It is absolutely open door. You don't have to get, if you want to buy into this community, there's nobody who approves you, you just buy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good and bad. I mean, it's good in that, you know, you attract the widest possible audience. It's bad in that you sometimes get people who don't participate.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as open visitation, sure, anybody can visit anytime. There's visitor parking,
mm-hmm.
people come and go. There's we're working on the basement of the common house we've refinished in the last 2 years, and there's an area that's for an apartment down there, so that when folks come from outside the community, they can actually be offered an apartment, a place to stay. The community hasn't had enough money to finish that apartment, but you can go down and see it. There's a bathroom and a place for a bedroom and furniture. It's just not finished yet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's pretty wide open.
Are there rules or agreements about dress or other matters of style?
I think there's probably a no nudity rule.
Yeah.
But as you heard from today's meeting, people walk around frequently in their pajamas or their robes, or so it's probably more casual than certainly you'd find in the typically in the suburbs or certainly downtown. People feel much more free to walk around. That's the difference between here and maybe a downtown community. And then as far as the suburbs, people feel, you know, more free to walk around. I don't think anybody thinks anything about walking out in their pajamas.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might feel uncomfortable with that, but other people are quite happy about doing that. But there's no dress code per se.
Relationship between sexual expression and the community.
Sexual expression and the community.
What is the relationship between sexual expression and community?
Okay.
What sexual rules, attitudes, and practices are present?
That's a good question.
private, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Those, you know,
yeah, I mean, it's because I think the attitudes are much like they would be in the suburbs or of any community. The only issue is that probably because you live so close to your neighbors that if two people were having a relationship, you might be aware of it earlier than you would ordinarily. It's sexually speaking, the community tends to be pretty monogamous and traditional, and so you see a lot of either young couples or empty nesters, and there's definitely, I don't necessarily see flirting or anything like that. There is divorce, there's mm-hmm. family situations, and so at the meeting today, Suzanne talked about she was living with Kurt over in this building and has since moved over into this building, and so you do see those kind of relationships come and go,
mm-hmm.
and people struggling with it, probably more so than you would notice that in a typical suburban community. I don't think there's not an overt sexual expression. I don't see, you know, it's more of what I would say is the expression you see is more of maybe spiritual or a health, a physical kind of health promoting, mental, spiritual kind of activities, yoga.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Tai Chi, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised
right.
to see somebody doing Tai Chi here in this community. That would be pretty typical.
Do you think the community would be accepting of alternative lifestyles?
I think the community has accepted. One of the things that came up to me today was a lesbian couple.
Mm-hmm.
I think the community is probably more accepting of lifestyles or arrangements like that.
Like you said, this is a fairly conservative town, so this is like an independent microcosm of me. More accepting than
it is more tolerant.
More
yeah.
tolerant than
what's interesting though is that
large.
Yeah, there's not a lot of it's fairly Caucasian. It's fairly white here,
mm-hmm.
and that mirrors the entire county. You know, there's not a lot of ethnic diversity, but and there have been ethnic minorities who've lived in the community. It was very much tolerated. In fact, you know, there was an interracial relationship, you know, which was,
mm-hmm.
No big deal here. Not a
might be taboo. Also,
it might be, but definitely not even a topic of discussion here. And it's just pretty much everybody accepts everyone. The thing that tends to be the deviant, the thing that is not accepted or less tolerated is a personality thing. So it's not skin color, it's not who you sleep with, it's are you a good person or are you a pain? If you're a pain, then the community will kind of not mm-hmm. shun you, but
right.
not embrace you.
What about the relationship between psychedelics and the community? I mean, are there drugs used? If so, what drugs? By most residents or only some? I mean,
I've heard, you know, actually, I've only encountered drug use on one occasion, but... In this community. There were, occasionally a marijuana cigarette gets passed around, and it's usually, I don't even see it in the community. It was out on the canal one afternoon where, hey, let's go smoke some marijuana next to the canal, watch the sunset kind of thing with some people. But, I'm told that, you know, some people partake of that stuff. It's pretty rare.
It's not open.
It's not open. It's pretty limited. I would say it's definitely in the 5 or 10% of households that might use it. It certainly doesn't tend to be I've never heard of LSD or anything like that.
You think marijuana use should be tolerated?
Openly?
No. I mean, there's children. I mean, I'm assuming...
Oh,
I mean, with families, it probably would be tolerated, but...
I think it must not be tolerated because I don't see people walking around smoking marijuana.
Right.
So, even though there's probably not a community rule against it, maybe there is, even though there's not a rule against it, I think there's some social mores that says we're not going to smoke marijuana in front of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But behind your closed doors, if you're, maybe you're a single person or whatever you do is I'm not going to call the cops on you,
mm-hmm.
and just don't. So the social mores is, don't do it openly, but do it privately.
Mm-hmm. What are the best and worst things about communal living?
We'll say living
in community.
Yeah. Well, the best thing is, it really is great that people do, know their neighbors. That's fantastic. And that people, I think the intergenerational nature of the community, when you move into a tract home, it's usually, when you look at communities in the suburbs, they're always at the same price point. So if you're looking at a community of homes that, starts at $300,000, you're going to get the same general socioeconomic strata living there. Whereas here, this happens to be the largest unit in the community, and it costs around $300,000. But there are other units that cost half as much here that are half the size or less than half the size. And so that affords you the chance to have maybe a bigger unit with more family
mm-hmm.
members, and then smaller units for empty nesters or young newlyweds. And so there's a different, although it's not as huge, it's the difference between 150 and 300,000. It's still different than a typical tract home neighborhood. And so that can only, it brings in a diverse population, and then being able to interact as closely as you can in communal living with a diverse population is terrific. It's something that you definitely don't get in typical tract home living. The problem, the only problems of living so close together is you're living so close together.
Yeah.
And so that it does create additional friction, and there are people who are liked in the community and people who are less liked, and so there's natural tension. And hey, Andrew?
Hey, could you tell me what Max's number is, please,
Dad? 850-9612.
Okay, 850-9612.
I think that's it. See you, bud. So there is some backbiting, infighting. Sometimes the issues are not dealt with directly. They're more personality focused. So that if I don't like this person, I don't really care what they're fighting for. I'm just gonna oppose them anyway. And so, so. Much like Survivor, there are people who probably would be voted off the island first. And
mm-hmm.
and one of the difficulties in communal living is that there may actually be divisive people who are irritants. And because we have no selection process, that I think we heard Laird today talk about, there are in his community, which is much smaller and far more communal, they do vote people out, and here that's not an option.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a difficult thing, that if there's someone who's just a pain, they will never leave, and so you kind of have to, it's like a, you got a bandage and it never heals, the wound never heals, because there's some people that are more difficult to get along with.
Mm-hmm. So. Think they know that, or?
I think they're completely oblivious to it, which makes it even more. I think they thrive on being pained.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
How has your life in the community has been affected by the experience? Have you been affected by living in the community?
Yeah, I have. I think that I'm far better a person for having lived in the community than not. I mean, by living in a community like this, you pick up additional skills that you wouldn't ordinarily.
A little more diplomatic.
You're more diplomatic, you're more consensus forces you to listen to everyone and just not do stuff your own way. You might be called on to do a task that you otherwise wouldn't necessarily do. So, or an activity even. It happened to be all guys in the community, but it was open to women too. Climbed a 14er last year, and that was something I did a lot as a kid, so 14ers were new for me, but for some people, climbing a 14er wasn't.
What's a 14er?
A 14,000 foot mountain.
Oh.
So Colorado has 53 14ers, and so, they can be arduous climbs, and so, that kind of experience, some people wouldn't have unless they lived in, they'd have in other communities, but they got here too, and maybe they got it earlier than they would normally have gotten it. So this is definitely a lot of positives. I think for unemployed people going through an economic crisis, I would tend to think that it's better to be in a community like this because there's more of a support network, and you can talk to people about maybe network with people about jobs. Or
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of folks here work for big companies, Quest, and things like that, and so you have a national or a natural support network that you wouldn't ordinarily have.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Yeah.
What other communities have you visited or know about?
That's kind of the meaning today, that I haven't been to any other cohousing communities. I know about them. I know Harmony Village and Golden and Nyland up in Louisville. And so I'm aware of them, but I haven't had the chance to visit them. I've read stuff about the communities and how they dealt with certain issues, and I would be really interested in seeing those communities and touring them, because you might get ideas. So I think at some point in the next year, I think we should organize tours of these things, since we do have something in common.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I think other folks mentioned those communities, and they may have had friends or something. I personally don't know anyone in those other communities, so I would truly be just an outsider taking a tour. But it would be great to take a tour and see how they, and even see Laird's, but fascinated by his community.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for me.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna move into a, an eight family commune where everybody shares their income. It's not going to be happening in my life, but I'm fascinated by it, and I'm certainly fascinated because the issues they deal with seem far greater than the issues we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that seeing their issues would make us feel like, I said at the meeting today that I'm a very optimistic person, the glass is half full, and you heard some more pessimistic people today.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the issues that we deal with are manageable.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly easy, whereas some other people think they're intractable and unsolvable. And I'm just optimistic, but I don't see them as huge deals.
That's it.
That's all? Okay.